Welcome back to Bitcoin Builders. Today, I am joined by Alex Leishman. Alex is the CEO of River, which is a Bitcoin financial services company. Now, River, for those of you who aren't familiar, is a fascinating company. They've been around since 2019 and offer products across a huge part of the Bitcoin financial ecosystem. They allow clients on multiple levels to buy Bitcoin, but also to buy access to hosted Bitcoin miners. On top of that, they also provide Lightning infrastructure for enterprises and beyond. Alex has been in the crypto ecosystem for coming up on a decade now, and his insights around the nature of Bitcoin and how people find their way to it, I think, are particularly acute. I had a ton of fun with this conversation, and I know you're going to enjoy it as well. Bitcoin Builders is brought to you by In Wolf's Clothing. Wolf is the first startup accelerator dedicated to Lightning and Bitcoin. Check them out at wolfnyc.com. It's Friday, June 2nd. This is Bitcoin Builders. Let's go. All right, Alex, welcome to Bitcoin Builders. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, I was super excited. It's funny, when I was when I searched your email address in my inbox, and I found a set of messages from like February 2020 where we were talking about Bitcoin, which is hilarious. So I'm excited to talk to you today. You guys just did a great big round. I think there's a good context for this. But really what I want to do is just talk a little bit about your sense of the Bitcoin markets and building in these markets and how that's evolved over time. But for people who aren't familiar with you or River, I would love to start with just a quick introduction.
Absolutely. I guess I'll start with an introduction about myself briefly. I've been working in Bitcoin most of my career, moved to the Bay Area in 2013 to pursue a career as a Bitcoin software engineer, and have been largely doing that ever since. A few highlights of the past. My first job in Bitcoin was at a Bitcoin startup called MyCoin. It was kind of like Coinbase for Taiwan back in the day. And they're still operating in the Taiwan market. I then went to grad school and did my computer science master's degree at Stanford University, where I helped TA the first Bitcoin class there, the first cryptocurrency class in the computer science department with Dan Benet as the professor. That was in 2015. It was back when, you know, AI was way cooler than Bitcoin. And although the class did have some good attendance, but all the AI classes were way more popular. And then a few years later, you know, that class was really popular. And now I would guess it's sort of back to the original portion where AI is the cool kid again. It's sort of like AI and crypto just keep seesawing back and forth with interest rates or something. I don't know. But let's see. And so before starting River, I was working at an investment fund called Polychain Capital. I was on the investment team helping diligence Bitcoin investments, and then also was building some infrastructure for them as an engineer for managing assets and such. And then started River in 2019. And the general idea behind River was sort of the culmination of sort of my years in the industry and sort of a dream that I'd always had, which is, you know, seeing, you know, someone build the Bitcoin bank of the world. And early on in my career, I thought Coinbase was going to really be doing that and was headed for that direction. And Coinbase has had an incredible journey, right? They've built an incredible business and made tons of money. There was a fork in the road and they took one path. And the idea behind River was, well, what if this other path was taken? And let me describe these two paths. The path that Coinbase took and a number of companies since have copied has been, well, what if we build a multi-crypto platform focused on trading that monetizes as much as possible this idea that there's going to be all these crypto assets that people want to trade a lot? And at the end of that path is like a nice mountain, right? There's a lot of cash at the top of that mountain. And you can kind of see the path there. It's pretty straightforward. The other fork is a path and there's fog on the path. And there may or may not be a much bigger mountain at the end of that path. The idea behind River was, well, what if we explored that path? And the way I would describe that path is, well, what if we just stick to Bitcoin and sort of take this bet that it's really Bitcoin that's going to be this reserve currency of the world. And this is really more of a, you know, Bitcoin is as much a monetary innovation as it is a technical innovation. And really the insight here is that we're redefining money, not finance. And like what happens if someone builds in that direction, right? And just deeply focuses on that and pushing Bitcoin forward as a store of value and a medium of exchange. What can we do if we laser focus on that approach? And that's what we're doing at River. And my theory is that the mountain at the end of that path is bigger than the mountain at the end of the sort of multi-crypto path as a company. But the path to get there is just much less clear, and there's a lot more fog. And so at River, basically, our vision is that Bitcoin is on a trajectory to become the world's reserve currency. and we're building the full stack to get there. Personal, business, and payments infrastructure. So we operate a financial institution in the United States that offers Bitcoin brokerage, custody, hosted mining, and wallet services for both individuals and businesses looking to use Bitcoin as a store of value and transact in it. And then we also have an enterprise payments infrastructure business that is focused on accelerating Bitcoin's adoption as a medium of exchange. And the major focus of that product right now is making it easy for other people to build on the Lightning Network. We have a Lightning Network API that makes it really easy to integrate Lightning payments into your app. A lot of existing crypto companies are using our services to add Lightning to their wallets. We're the Lightning backend for Chivo, the app for the government of El Salvador. And we have a growing number of both large and small companies building on this service. The idea behind that is that running Lightning Network infrastructure is tricky. We've been doing it for many years, and we just expose that as a simple API and take care of all the hard work. That's River in a nutshell. And yeah.
Amazing. Very useful heuristic, if for no other reason than framing podcast discussions, although I'm sure for beyond that as well. I want to go back to 2019 and hone in on sort of the moment that you're starting this. One of the things that I find fascinating is the number of Bitcoin companies that are building now who were started around that time, you know, late 2019, early 2020. There's obviously a very different moment in terms of what the crypto industry's thoughts were relative to this. So, you know, you had been all the way through the 2017 cycle and the sort of slow peter out into the winter of 2018 and 2019. What was the receptivity in the market, either in terms of investors or in terms of customers, when you launched, you know, a decidedly and sort of, you know, specifically Bitcoin-only business in 2019?
So it was definitely harder to raise for River than it was for a multi-crypto company, right? The major sort of opinion in Silicon Valley amongst venture capital was crypto is the narrative. Crypto, Web3, DeFi, that's where all of the interesting things to build are. And I'm not saying that none of that stuff is, you know, is valid, but my theory was, I mean, Bitcoin is still the king and nobody is really laser focused on moving this thing forward. Someone's got to do this, right? Everyone else is getting distracted by all these shiny new things. There's a lot of hard work left to do here. And so what mattered was that we found the right investors and that a few people believed in this vision. And we did, and we were able to land some really high quality investors who believed in this vision. Even funds that are multi-crypto, you know, this did resonate with them because at the end of the day, you know, a lot of the funds that invested in us, they have lots of bets across the whole crypto ecosystem, but they don't really have a Bitcoin bet. And Bitcoin is still the biggest cryptocurrency in the world. And other than holding Bitcoin, you know, making a venture allocation to a Bitcoin-focused company was logical for a lot of people.
I've spent a lot of time, probably like more than is actually valuable, thinking about Silicon Valley's relationship with Bitcoin and why it was, you know, to what extent it got it but didn't care because it wasn't monetizable in the same way versus, you know, I think that there on some level, a lot of the folks in Silicon Valley, especially on the venture capitalist set, are, you know, they bring their priors with them to what they're looking to invest in. And so they were reading into Bitcoin the technology disruption, not the monetary disruption, right? They're not monetary theorists. I mean, you've been there for a long time. How often have you heard, especially going back 5 years or 6 years, people discussing how monetary policy and interest rates impacted funding? Like, it was never, right? Venture capitalists were almost completely oblivious to the idea that they were operating in a larger monetary structure versus it just being Y Combinator that was increasing valuations, not like the flood of new capital into sort of this high-risk ecosystem. I don't know. I think it's interesting just to see sort of, you know, to trace that because it hasn't mattered in terms of Bitcoin's continued evolution, but access to capital does matter, obviously, in terms of how many people and types of companies can be built in a particular ecosystem. And I think that there's been a pretty dramatic shift over the last, especially the last year, in terms of a venture level interest in Bitcoin. Has that been what you've seen as well?
Yeah, I mean, there definitely has been more, I would say, dedicated capital allocated towards Bitcoin venture investing. I don't think it's anywhere near the scale of the broader crypto ecosystem still. What I have noticed is as interest rates have risen, we're seeing some of the people that were focused on crypto Web3 come over to Bitcoin and realize that there's more to the story here than maybe was obvious when, you know, you have to think about sort of what sort of like VCs and founders' mindsets were when Web3 was going crazy. Well, let's say you're just a smart guy, right? And, you know, this wasn't like you weren't living and breathing this stuff, but you come across it. And most of the content you're seeing is not about Bitcoin. It's about all this new stuff that has all this really sexy looking documentation and marketing and signaling, social signaling around it. Oh, like Andreessen invested in this crypto project. Like every signal you're getting is pointing you towards crypto, right? As the interest rates rose and sort of a lot of these, the bubble sort of started imploding a bit, lots of folks started like going further down the rabbit hole and realizing, well, there's something interesting here in this Bitcoin stuff, actually. You know, it's not as immediately obvious, but as you like actually get into it, you really start to appreciate it much more. And I think people are just further down the path now than they were a few years ago. And inevitably, sort of most people's arcs, most people's trajectories in this industry is like when they get into it, they're like, all the coins. I love all the coins, right? And then eventually, you know, they start to like form stronger opinions. And often it ends in sort of a Bitcoin adjacent sort of ideology, whether it's, you know, not necessarily sometimes it's maximalism, but sometimes it's sort of like, yeah, you know what? Like Bitcoin is really sort of like the biggest piece of this story. And so I think that's basically what we're seeing is we're just seeing a lot of these people sort of get further down the path as well.
Mm-hmm. Almost like there's a natural cadence or, you know, evolution that people go through at, you know, faster or slower speeds. But, you know, to some extent, this is just them having gone through that over the course of the last cycle.
Yeah. And the other thing, though, about Bitcoin is it's less immediately obviously monetizable mm-hmm. for building businesses around it. Like, you know, at the end of the day, like I actually don't believe there's going to be thousands and thousands of Bitcoin companies, right? Because it's not like we don't call them dollar companies. Like Bitcoin is a protocol. It's a network. There's going to be a big ecosystem of companies that enable you to use that and do things with that as individuals or businesses. But, you know, really it's like, I think there's like the whole second order, third order sort of implications is potentially where a lot of the investment capital will go someday.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about the legacy of the last cycle in terms of customers, right? So how the evolution of people who are actually buying Bitcoin, you know, changed over the course of that time. So, you know, you guys start in 2019, you know, you roll into 2020, COVID hits, lockdowns happen, money starts flowing into the system, Paul Tudor Jones, great monetary inflation thesis. And then that sort of kicks off this cycle. Obviously, there's a lot of other dimensions to it in Web3. There's, you know, DeFi summer, there's NFTs, there's, you know, so lots of converging narratives, not just one thing. But what was your kind of average buyer base like at the beginning of the company? And how did that change over the course of sort of the last bull run?
So I'd say I'd compare it to sort of like last bull run and now. Mm-hmm. So the last bull run, the big money was flowing in, right? The wealthy individuals, like ultra high net worths, businesses, you know, like corporates were like circling, right? Even some of these big names that you've heard of, you know, like Tesla bought $1 billion in Bitcoin, right? The big money was there. What's interesting though, is that, so that was like the sort of peak up to the in the last bull run. What's happened since is the big money has pulled back substantially. So volumes for everyone across the board are down substantially because the big whales just aren't there anymore. And there's a number of reasons for that. One is sort of it's just riskier as an institution now to use this thing now that it's crashed. But two is like, well, they don't have as much cheap cash to be thrown around either. But the usage and the actual like monthly transacting user accounts and continues to tick up. So for us, I mean, we're hitting record transacting user numbers every month. And so what we're seeing is that now like there's just this steady growth in regular people using Bitcoin more and more. And so that's what's interesting to see here. It's not the traders. The traders and the big sort of institutional money has pulled back. The believers are growing and using it. And that numbers, those numbers are increasing day by day.
One of the big interesting narrative moments of this year was Bitcoin price going up as banking crisis happens. Did you guys see anything that would sort of, you know, lend evidence one way or another to that being a meaningful narrative moment for Bitcoin buyers?
It was definitely meaningful. I think it was a powerful narrative to see the Bitcoin price jump while banks were collapsing. I think at the end of the day, so we definitely saw a decent amount of corporate interest and inflows, sort of especially on like the SMB level into Bitcoin. ourselves, we increased our own Bitcoin treasury as well. Because at the end of the day, it's the only asset, liquid asset as a company you can sort of like fully reason about the counterparty risk of. And now that said, I think that was really just like a step on sort of a, what's going to be a longer term realization for people. I don't know how this banking crisis plays out over time, but it's not like, you know, when First Republic collapsed, Walmart put 20% of their treasury into Bitcoin, right? So we saw, I think, a step towards companies realizing that there's something here from a risk management perspective, but we didn't see a full like YOLO dive in.
My kind of thought around this has been, I think that there are a lot of people who filed away that moment in their brain without even realizing that they did, where it will come back to bear later. You know, you have to think, especially because it was a mainstream-driven narrative. It wasn't a CoinDesk and the Block, you know, and Blockworks-driven narrative, right? It was Yahoo Finance and Fortune and all these sort of very traditional outlets that were making that sort of Bitcoin, you know, this is what it was made for argument. And, you know, there are a lot of reasons why, you know, a bunch of people didn't necessarily rush out and place a bunch of buy orders for Bitcoin, but they still saw those articles, right? They still kind of were part of that swirl. And I think in some ways it actually, you know, I've had a number of conversations recently around whether that sort of narrative has petered out. And I kind of think it was almost like a narrative layaway a little bit for a future time, more so than being something that was sort of immediately important in March or April or whenever it was.
Yes. You know, I agree with that. When you really step back, most people slept through that whole thing. Like, you know, even most like SMB owners, they were probably like maybe like heard about it, but like most people in the country, 99% of people were not worried about their bank deposits, right? If you went out on the street and went and talked to normal people, no one was worrying about this stuff. It was all very much like, it was like Silicon Valley, people with money in Silicon Valley banks, but most other people weren't really impacted. And so now I think the theory in our industry is, well, this is only the beginning, right? This will inevitably like continue to roll and spread over time. But I think we saw sort of an outsized reaction in our community. Mm-hmm. It's not representative of how most people were viewing the bank collapses.
Super interesting. I want to ask you about a couple of other business lines that you guys have, because I think one of the things that you have insights to, and you know, Bitcoin companies like you do, is again, a little bit more feedback that's outside of the, let's put it this way, it's more action than talk, right? Because you're actually interacting with customers who are making decisions with their money. So the two other product lines are mining services, or sort of, you know, ability for people to invest in and around mining, and then Lightning infrastructure. I'd love to kind of just see, you know, where those things stand today and how they've evolved, call it over the last 6 months.
Our mining product is an interesting one. So the way it works is we have contracts with high quality mining colocation facilities, so special data centers, and we're able to procure space and energy there in bulk at discount rates and pass that savings through to our customers who are buying mining machines from us and hosting them at this facility. All of it is fully sort of seamlessly integrated into the app. You can literally log into River, and just as easily as you can buy Bitcoin, you can buy miners. And then those miners are running, you pay just a flat dollar monthly rate for energy, and you get all the Bitcoin your machines mine. And we make our money on a margin on the electricity and a margin on the machine sale. And there's been a lot of interest in this product over the last year. We were actually sold out for quite a while. We've recently procured more space, and we have more space to sell finally. And we're seeing that start to fill up pretty quickly. What's interesting about mining is, you know, funny enough, a good chunk of mining customers are sort of the same sort of brokerage customers who are buying Bitcoin. But a lot of people buying miners actually are a completely different segment. They're people who are looking for a different sort of risk return profile than just buying spot Bitcoin. One of the interesting things about mining is you can actually make money mining, even if the Bitcoin price stays completely flat in theory, right? Like there's a future where your ROI is positive, even if Bitcoin was flat. So we're finding it's more like larger money, people sort of more looking for dollar-based returns tend to gravitate more towards the mining side. We've had people mining who have never even bought Bitcoin before, which is kind of funny.
Super interesting. Yeah.
So that's been an interesting thing to see. That actually wasn't what we expected. But and then on the Lightning Infra side, so another nice thing is, so this whole Ordinals thing, right? The Ordinals frenzy that's caused the transaction fees in the blockchain to spike has been great, not only for our mining clients who their revenues went up a good 20 to 30% in the last month just from blockchain fees. And it's also been a big driver for our Lightning infrastructure business, because all of these exchanges and wallets are realizing that having only on-chain functionality isn't going to work long-term. That's like sort of a mobile banking app only supporting bank wires, right? You need the consumer transaction layer. And so we're seeing a lot of inbound interest, and we're actively working on onboarding these crypto wallets and other crypto apps onto the Lightning network.
I was going to ask about Ordinals and, you know, the extent to which you guys saw it as, you know, either A, a stress test, or B, you know, sort of provoking this sort of, you know, just almost just a recognition of what Bitcoin might be like, you know, a little bit down the line.
Yeah. So this is a very interesting thing. So while we don't have any Ordinal specific products, it's validating our hypothesis about what's going to happen. And that is a realization that most of the stuff people want to do with blockchains, you actually just need these small commitments onto the blockchain, and you can do all this other stuff like layers above, right? Ordinals is like a completely separate layer from Bitcoin that has its own logic, that has its own sort of, you know, generally agreed upon algorithm for tracking sats through the blockchain. The Bitcoin blockchain knows nothing about the Ordinals protocol. And then to assign an ordinal to an inscription, you just need to make a special transaction embedding that data on the blockchain. What people are realizing here fundamentally and in a bigger context is you can do a lot of the stuff that everyone was doing on these smart contract chains on Bitcoin and move a lot of the logic off chain, right? And that's what I call it, sort of like the small footprint realization, right? Most people just need the validation on chain. They don't need the computation on chain. And I think we're going to see more and more of that.
When it comes to these ordinal, like whatever debate is the big debate in sort of Bitcoin at the moment, either it's ordinals or BRC20 or what have you, how much do your clients even pay attention to those things? You know, I'm sure that you have a pretty big range of customers, but you know, you touch people like you just mentioned with mining who haven't even bought Bitcoin. Like, are these sort of conversations, you know, do they filter out into the rest of the world, or are they really just sort of the domain of the, you know, denizens of Bitcoin and crypto Twitter?
I think the answer is a little bit of both. What I've seen is that Ordinals is bringing a lot of crypto people into Bitcoin. And so our clients tend to not ask us a lot about Ordinals. I mean, the thing about Ordinals, right, is it's sort of like at least sort of in the NFT, it's sort of like art. And so it's not like our customers are using Bitcoin to like preserve long-term wealth. They're not really thinking about, oh, can I also use River to buy art, right? I think that's a sort of a separate category. And it's a pretty separate customer segment from who uses us today.
It's a fascinating thing. I always, you know, one of the things that's, I think, a challenge for folks who are deep in any industry is to have a clear-eyed kind of perspective on what sort of the normal people who are, you know, not necessarily even just on the fringes, but who aren't sort of in the most sort of enfranchised subsection of the industry actually think. When you guys are looking at sort of the world of new possible products, how do you prioritize? You know, like you guys just raised a bunch of money, which is awesome. Congratulations. Like, how do you think about what you want to build next with it?
Yeah. So we're focused on, you know, our three verticals: personal, serving consumers, serving businesses, and serving enterprises building on our infrastructure. And so really, when we think about what we're building next, we're focused on building products that help accelerate Bitcoin's adoption as a store of value and a medium of exchange across those sectors. We're investing a lot into our Lightning infrastructure business, and we'll also be investing a lot into serving businesses down the road. So stay tuned there. And there's just a lot left to build. You know, the Lightning network is still very early. It's still very small. So we're putting a lot of resources into growing that, and we're putting a lot of resources into just onboarding more people into Bitcoin, because still not a lot of people in Bitcoin, but there's still a long ways to go to make this mainstream. And that's really what we're focused on.
How do you think about, you know, we're about a year out from the halving. You know, you guys obviously as a business, you have to sort of project your sense of where customers are going to come from and how things are going to grow. Obviously, Bitcoin is more cyclically driven than a lot of other businesses in some ways. But, you know, how do you guys think about the next year? What are your best guesses, you know, obviously in a world of uncertainty around how the Bitcoin space might evolve, you know, between now and the halving, let's call it?
So we're here for the long term, right? So what I tell my team is prepare for the bear, right? Always assume the market's going to be crappy for a long time in anything we build, especially during a bull market. So we're prepared to wait this out. And we're building and focused on serving our clients, steadily growing the business. We have a very healthy balance sheet, very healthy cash flows. And so we're here to stay. And basically our take is we'll be here until the next bull market, whenever that is, whether it's in a month or, you know, it's years from now. And frankly, the further out it is, the more time we have to build stuff.
Do you anticipate increased competition, call it in the next, you know, whenever the next bull run happens, from traditional financial service providers coming into the Bitcoin space? You know, how do you guys think about that?
I used to worry about that, but the last year has made me realize these guys are not, you have to believe in this stuff to really make the most of it, and they don't believe in it. And so no, I'm not worried. By the time the next bull market comes, it's going to be too late for them to capitalize on it. They're not going to be able to ship something immediately. They're not working on anything right now, with the exception of maybe a few players. But no, the FTX stuff scared most of these big companies away from touching this stuff in any real way. Now, that is, there are exceptions, but I'm just not worried.
What is the thing that makes you the most optimistic about Bitcoin right now in this particular moment?
The monetary product market fit. Like, there is a clear, logical sort of like argument for the math of the US dollar isn't adding up. There is a massive need globally for this scarce, decentralized digital asset that you can transfer anywhere in the world without the government stopping you. And that product market fit is clear. It's becoming clearer by the year. And that is, it's just obvious.
Alex, awesome to have you guys in the space building. Appreciate you taking a little time to hang out with us today, and look forward to seeing what you guys do in the months to come.
Same here. Thanks, man. It was great to be on.
All right, guys, back to NLW for a quick wrap up here. So I mentioned at the beginning of the conversation that when I was looking for Alex's email in my inbox, I found an exchange that we had back in February of 2020. We were talking about Bitcoin, and I wrote this line: "Right now, Bitcoin continues to be lumped in with the rest of the industry, despite diverging further and further. I have a hard time believing that in 10 years this will be the case. Even if other parts of what is now lumped together as crypto are successful, industry maturity will mean a further separation from different thriving parts of the ecosystem. Bitcoin will be a central, dominant, and robust financial ecosystem unto itself." Now, I think that that statement holds up pretty well, but the reason that it does, frankly, or at least a big part of the reason, is that companies like River exist to help build out the infrastructure to allow that to be so. I think Alex is right to identify that as much as traditional financial actors might find that it's imperative for them to get in this space, there is a fundamental difference between companies driven by people who actually truly believe in this ecosystem. I think seeing the way that River has evolved in terms of what products they offer and who they serve is really fascinating and a great bellwether for understanding the broader Bitcoin space. Thanks again to Alex for joining Bitcoin Builders. Thanks to my sponsor, In Wolf's Clothing, Wolf, the first startup accelerator dedicated to Bitcoin and Lightning, for supporting the show. And thanks to you guys for listening. Until next time, let's build.